It's Wednesday, July 14th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 198 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name's Pat.
Getting closer and closer to Gen Con. Once again, if you have not, get out to conplanner.com/GenCon2010. Get signed up with the Toff Bitch Network for the multifarious, the exciting, the great events that these guys have got coming up. Games, food runs, beer runs. Heck, if nothing else, it's just a great way to fall in with a great bunch of people who are very friendly, very accepting, very outgoing.
And like to drink.
And you know what? Who will accept you like family. You're going to have a great time. If you're going to be at Gen Con, get out there, get signed up on the Toff Bitch Network. Let these guys, and by these guys, I mean Nick, Christian, and Aaron, take good care of you throughout that convention.
Oh, yeah. Those are my boys. You know that?
All right, Wayne, you wanted to plug something here. We've never really touted this on the air because of the fact that we weren't sure precisely how far it was going to make it.
Yeah, I wanted to have a good background basically before we started talking about it. I wanted there to be plenty of material around before people had a chance to go out there, because there's nothing I hate more than hearing about something, finding it really interesting,
and
going over there and there's no back catalog of there's nothing there.
Actually, where I was going to back up even a little bit before that is, some time ago I purchased skiesofglass.com just to have the domain in case we ever decide to develop anything with it. And Chris and Mikey Mason worked together and they put together a comic that was going pretty well, but didn't make it very far before Mikey Mason got too busy to continue the art. Chris is now in talks with another artist to pick up where that left off. But because that comic kind of petered out after only like 8 installments, we decided, you know, we're not going to plug this until it really gets going again.
Right.
But what you decided to do is, in the meantime, to keep the site alive with serial fiction or short fiction that you're writing based on your rendering of Metropolis, Illinois, in the Skies of Glass post-nuclear setting.
Right, and I wouldn't really call it short fiction. The end goal is that this will be a full novel that can be released in a PDF format, or however, whatever we want to do with it. The point is, for now, it is a weekly short fiction. It has consistently come out every week on Monday. Actually, it's telling part of the story that I told on my game at Fear the Con 3. So any of my players that were in that will recognize the characters, some of the personalities. There's much more to it than just what was in the game. And it's a story I've been really excited about ever since my first role-playing game. My first game, as everyone's heard on here, was a Skies of Glass game. And as we're wandering around, I start having this conversation with you and with Chad about, I wonder what happened to Metropolis. As we've said once before, I enjoy Metropolis, Illinois. I love that town. I love everything about it. Well, I get to wondering, is the Superman statue still there? What's the town doing?
Yeah, and the only strict boundary I gave you was, for heaven's sake, there will not be a Superman cult in that town.
Which was what?
It wasn't a problem at all, because that was never my intention.
I mean, my development of the Doctor Who cult in Britain is a thumbs up.
No, we'll get back to that.
Okay.
It sounds a little Queenie. But
yeah, but it never worked out in game for us to visit the town, so I just started writing up the fiction about it. And then Fear the Con came around, and it's like, I want to run something I'm comfortable with. I've got the story, I know the system, so I ran the system. After that, when the webcomic had to go on hiatus, that was my perfect opportunity to start getting the stuff out there. And I have been getting some good feedback from the few people that know it's out there, but I wanted to actually put it out here now for everyone. Skiesofglass.com, right on the front page, this comes out every week. We're 6 parts in. By the time this releases, we could be 7, 8. I'm not sure exactly when this episode will release to give you a good idea, but I have a decent back catalog going of it. This is going to continue coming out consistently until the story is done, and I have a strong passion for it. I want to hear from anyone that's reading it. I want feedback on this. Go out, have a read.
Not bad feedback. Just totally positive, good feedback.
Well, it's positive to give you a negative feedback without being a dick. So
yeah.
we'll put it out there.
On the internet, sir.
Yeah, believe it or not, it's a rare and difficult thing. It is easier for the camel to pass through the eye of a needle and someone on the internet not to be a dick. But nonetheless, yeah, it is possible.
This is fiction free of charge out there. Anyone that enjoys the Skies of Glass setting, anyone that just wants a good story, hopefully this will be to your liking.
And we also hope that at some point here, Chris will be able to resurrect that comic, because I've seen the full script and he's got some pretty good places he's going with it. So I'm hoping this will work out. But in the meantime, I don't know. And certainly get out there and check out what is coming out of the mind of Wayne Cole. Yep. So
hopefully in a couple months or whatever, we'll have two stories coming out. A webcomic again and fiction.
All right, Chad, let's shift over to something here that's going to start out in the land of video games, but is then going to move into the land of role-playing games, which is an experience that you had playing Left 4 Dead 2.
Oh, yes. I play a lot of Left 4 Dead 2. Actually, I have to say that last night I reached my 300th hour of Left 4 Dead 2.
And I think I'm at like 30. So you've got me really beat.
What can I say? I just really like killing zombies. Or I like being a zombie and killing human beings.
I actually greatly prefer playing the infected. I find it's more interesting. And on top of that, I'm actually better at it. Like, if you look at my scores...
It's a different mindset for each team. It's
cool. If you look at my scores after a game, when I'm on the survivor side, my contributions are typically pretty minimal. When you look at my contributions as infected, I'm typically first or second on the charts all the way across.
Yeah. Well, so suffice it to say, I play a lot of Left 4 Dead 2. And,
yeah, you do.
I play it on Steam. I don't play it on Xbox, so I play it on the PC. My Steam ID is PRORPGER. Pro RPGer.
With a bunch of dashes in it, but go on.
No, and you could do it without dashes or with dash. I got both. So yeah, feel free to friend me if you were looking for a game. But yeah, I was playing with these two strangers. No idea who they were. They weren't Fear the Boot fans. They're just some pug. And this guy was talking to his friend, kind of teaching him how to play, and I was on their team. And
for anyone not in on the lingo, pug is an abbreviation of pickup group. Continue.
Yeah, usually pretty crappy, like this one was. And so this guy is like trying to explain to the... to his friend how to play, because he just picked it up. And the guy was saying, well, yeah, you know, I just picked this game up for you because I wanted to play a game with you. And the friend started asking, so what, how do you gain experience? Do you get stuff? You know, what's the point? And the guy's like, no, there is no point like that. You play it in rounds and you win the round or you lose the round. And that's all you get is you get a feeling of satisfaction if you win and you get the agony of defeat if you lose, I guess. And he's like, so there's nothing you can get. And the guy's like, yeah, that's true. So his friend was like, if there's no progress, there is no point. And I got from the guy that his buddy was a WoW player. And in WoW, progress is like, if you're a progress raider, you are getting stuff. Every time you log in, you are making progress towards some goal.
Oh, yeah, so even if you're not a raider, you progress through levels. And then once you run out of levels, you progress through gear. And if you look at gear in most MMOs, what does it have? Well, it has attribute points, maybe new procs or spell-like abilities. So effectively, gear does the exact same thing levels would do. So gear becomes the new metaphor for levels. And so you grind your way up to whatever the max level is in a game. We'll keep going with WoW and say level 80.
Right.
And then you keep getting gear, which makes you effectively level 81, 82, 83, you know, whatever on a chain.
So this guy was trying to explain to him, and I didn't get involved because it sounded like a little bit of a domestic to me, but this guy was trying to explain that, you know, you play for, God forbid, the enjoyment of the game, the enjoyment of being on a team with your friends, the joy of winning, of pwning noobs, of losing and learning something, the feeling of accomplishment, of increasing your skill, whatever reason people play first-person shooters.
You know, I have the opposite problem that guy did when it comes to first-person shooters. There are some of them out there that have stats you can have. The more you play, the more you level up, you get a better gun, you get better this or that. Those bother me, because when you go in, everything is all perfectly balanced. You're going in. The more a person plays, the better they're going to get at the game, just because that's the nature of playing a video game. You're going to become a better shot if you keep shooting. You're going to become better at the game. I don't want stats to mess up the balance of that even further. I don't want to jump in and, you know, I've played these games for years, so I have some skills coming in, but this guy has played 300 hours of this game, so he has these uber skills, these uber stats in this game. And I'm not even going to stand a chance. So for a versus game, for a competitive game, I really have a problem with advancement. I don't want it.
Well, yeah. And before we take this over to role-playing games on the tabletop, well, let's keep talking about video games here for a minute. To some extent, I think progression is part of what I blame for the shallowness of so many online games. Now, I'm not against progression. I have no problem depending on the game. Now, Wayne, with your point of first-person shooters, point absolutely taken. And
yeah, it's a versus thing in there. That's why it's different.
The best metaphor I've seen for progression in a first-person shooter was PlanetSide, where what you gained was not better stuff, but different stuff. You had certification points. When you started the game, you could be certified in anything in the game. Didn't matter what. At least it used to be. I don't know if they've changed it. But when it first released, you could learn anything. Any gun, any vehicle, any suit of armor. But you only had so many points to spend. So what you gained over time was diversity. So in addition to driving a tank, you could also drive the transport, or you could also use the anti-aircraft missile, or whatever. Within an MMO, progression doesn't bother me in and of itself, but I typically find that what they do is, rather than giving you more to do or interesting things to do, their way of expanding the game or keeping you interested is just lengthening the treadmill. That now, instead of grinding your way up to 50, you now have to get to 60, 70, 80, 90, 100. Now, instead of getting gear that's this good, you have to get gear that's even better and improve your reputation with these factions and pick up 100, as Chad says, bloody back boar buttholes. You just have to go out and keep doing
it's
stuff.
Wolf buttholes, by the way.
Why does a wolf have 3 buttholes, but this other wolf doesn't have any buttholes?
Yeah, I kill a boar and he drops no hooves.
I had this discussion. I'm sure a lot of people played MMOs have this discussion, but I think the logic that prevails in that, it makes no sense if you're like a guy with knives and you just stabby, 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 and then the thing's dead. But if you're a mage and it's whoa-boom, and then suddenly animal parts are raining and you're trying to pick out which one's the asshole, sure, I can see a wolf not having one. You blew it up.
Point here being that so many MMOs, I remember going back to the days of the older online games, the MUDs, Muses, Mushes, which we've talked about several times on this show, and I love the fact that I wasn't progressing, which that itself is not a virtue.
We weren't progressing, we were role-playing.
Bingo. It was the
dialogue.
It was the fact
story.
That I was excited to get on and play every night because the game was compelling. I was not chasing what Aaron Stack calls
his penny victories. I love Aaron Stack's or Flux's description of MMOs. He has a goal-oriented personality. He likes setting goals in his life. He likes achieving goals in his life. I think a lot of people are like that. And WoW tickles that little fancy with their petty little victories. And that's exactly what WoW is. I did all this stuff and I dropped it. I got the points and I beat them all up and I got the main bad guy and we did it together and my boots dropped. Wow, that's really deep, but it is cool. I've been excited about my boots dropping.
That's why I like levels in MMOs. I'm not an MMO person typically, but I do. There's something really gratifying about digging a level and getting a new ability and getting up to the higher levels. My problem is when I reach max level, I'm done. I have no more interest in that character if I'm not getting XP. I don't care about stuff. The end game isn't interesting to me. It's the journey to get there.
Yeah.
When I'm there, the story of that character is done.
Yeah, well, and the story of the character is done because unless they keep extending the treadmill, the game is done. It's over. You know, I keep hoping Paddle Play WoW because nothing makes me happier than when his pants drop. Still on video games just for one last moment, I think what I would say about our experience with these older games versus some of these newer MMOs is the fact that we were progressing. We were just not progressing in the numeric sense. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about an RPG. If you come into role-playing and you're playing the clear and loot sort of game, the dungeon crawl, whatever exactly it is in your game, you walk in, you kill something, you take its crap, you get 100 XP, you get its stuff, you go to the next room and do it again. There is this very simple sort of progression. There is an obvious reward to what's going on. And some people that love a tactical style of gaming get a lot out of that. Mm-hmm. Now, in our games, personally, we don't generally focus on that because of the fact that we're more interested in the story. We'd rather see characters. We'd rather see deep plots. We'd rather see a compelling narrative as opposed to just killing some goblin for his boots or his butthole or whatever. But here's the thing, is we are progressing. There are so many kinds of progression that go above and beyond that. If I look at something like one of our role-playing games, we have played 3 or 4 sessions now of this game, and I have not gained a single point of experience on my character sheet. I have not gained any noteworthy piece of gear. In fact, the only piece of gear I've picked up is I killed and butchered a deer and turned part of its skull into a headdress that does nothing.
That was a part of a plan.
Yeah, it was part of a plan.
Actually, Wayne has
Chad
lost gear.
Bastard that he is has destroyed my guitar and my hat.
But the point is, we're not progressing that way, but nonetheless, the characters are advancing. The story is developing. Relationships are changing. There is a sort of progress that's going on, even if I can't quantify it down to I've dinged level 4.
And that's, to me, that's what I want out of a role-playing game. I don't care if you give me a point of experience. I don't care if you give me the sword of plus three, whatever. I don't care about any of that. My reward is the game itself. In fact, John even challenged me. He's like, so what, your reward is the game itself? And I'm like, yes. Yes, it is the reward. That's what I get out of it.
And I certainly don't. But, you know, I like both. I want both. And that's where I think you and I differ, mm-hmm. because I think, well, you just said it. You don't care about that. I do. And like I said, especially in this game, like you said, we're playing it's a D&D game. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'll admit it's important for me, for my character to advance, because for me, that's a way that I become, well, I gain access to more of my abilities. Right, let's not say more powerful, but that is a big deal
powerful,
for me. I
that
like that.
Cool. Yeah.
But I also, it's very important to me for me, like you said, the role playing. I like the developing of the character through the RP, but that's part of what I like. And I like both equally.
And
well.
I don't think that one gets in the way of the other.
I don't
think they have to.
No, not at all. You can ding level 4 while advancing seeing your character as a person. Yeah.
I recognize one of my weaknesses as a GM in that I would not be very good at balancing experience. I would either give you guys too much or I'd not give you guys enough. So I made a deal with my group. I told them when there is a group consensus of, you know what, it's time. We all want to ding. Boom. You all got a level.
You know, and I do like it abstracted like that. I don't want to keep track of XP. I don't want to get something for everything I kill. But for me, I enjoy having my character advancement that's happening in character, my personality advancement. I like being able to write something on the sheet showing what I'm doing in character. And that's what I tend to do anytime that we do character advancement in games. I tend to put it more into social skills or he's been working out here, so I give him maybe another muscle. You know, just something related to what actually has happened in the game versus that's a cool power. I want
that. You know what I use advancement for? Sometimes I write my character background and write up and personality as being a little bit more ambitious than the character is mechanically. And so I use experience to get him up to what I had wanted.
He was supposed to be good at 6 things, but starting characters only have enough points to be good at 4.
4, exactly.
And so, you have to.
Or I discover things through playing him. It's like, you know what? He would know how to read ancient Sanskrit. And that's come up, and I can't deal with that mechanically, so the next time I ding, boom, ancient Sanskrit.
Or we keep running across the situation, and it's not fun because I don't have this ability. By now, if this keeps happening over and over again, he would learn how to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that one of the things that we've lost in a lot of role-playing games that do use this level mechanic and leveling and dinging and whatnot is sort of role-playing out that mm-hmm. advancement. When you get enough experience that you're going to become mm-hmm. the next level of a fighter or a mage or whatever, and you get access to these new abilities, why just say, okay, boom, I got it, and now it's just
boom,
on the sheet.
Plus 2 to strength.
Exactly.
Flex!
Well, you know,
and the
take that opportunity
there
as the GM to role play through with your characters. Yeah. Okay, this next session or whatever, we're going to be working over the next couple sessions uh-huh. about what is it you're going to do to earn this advancement these stats on your sheet. I mean, it's a built-in way to do more RP.
I agree with that, and I also agree equally so with the idea of retconning the character. Like I said, my character should know ancient Sanskrit. I can finally have the points to buy it. All of a sudden, he's always known it. Let's just hand-wave that and say he's always known this. He didn't learn an ancient dead language that no one speaks out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Just as we said, one does not preclude the other, which I mm-hmm. totally believe.
Yeah, I don't believe
you could have a game
all.
Where you gain power and loot and also advance as a character. I think really the thing that I take away from this is the fact that it just really bothers me to see a game mechanic, whether it's a tabletop game or a video game, use one as an excuse to avoid the other. That in World of Warcraft, the patches and the expansions generally add more levels, not more things to do. You know, I say this as a person mm-hmm. who enjoys World of Warcraft. I'm not bashing the game.
I was spoiled by City of Heroes.
Yeah,
that hasn't done that.
Exactly. It's one of the things I enjoyed about City of Heroes. By the time I left the game, I mean, they were on their, I don't know how many, I mean, they weren't expansions. They had issues or whatever.
They were expansions.
But yeah, they were basically little mini expansions or half expansions. And they had only once increased the level cap on each faction, the good guys and bad guys. Every other one had added different things to do, more diversity to the world, to where you could keep exploring with a character, and it wasn't more levels or better gear you were picking up. There was new things to uncover, new things to explore. And going back to this Left 4 Dead thing, I guess I understand how someone who comes out of a very reward-based game would be confused or frustrated by the fact that they're not being mechanically rewarded for the kills.
It makes me sad.
Well, but
it makes me look at this person and think they are so obsessed with gaming or with this progression that they can't just sit there and have fun.
Have fun with their friend. Exactly what I was going to say is that the progress they're missing out on is the experience of getting closer to your friend, the experience of getting better at the game as a person, you know, learning the strategies, learning the maps and things like that.
I feel sad for you, Mr. Nameless Person, to play with chat. I feel sad for you, Mr. Gaming Douchebag.
I mean, to take these even out of role, out of the electronic game world, to me, that's just like you're saying, if I'm going to sit down and play, say, checkers or chess with a friend or a card game, you know, like there's certain, like some rummy games, or if you play bridge or whatever like that.
Well, my
or
checker, even if you can play, level up to king.
Well, true. But even if you play tennis,
pawns, I mean, can level up.
You know, you play sports game, like you play tennis with a friend. I mean, unless you're in a league, you're going to play that game and somebody's going to win it. And then that's it. There's no progression.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you played a game with a friend and you enjoyed
it. What was that? Dan and I were playing a game that had points.
Yeah.
And we were earning points. Points get you nothing. Doesn't even get you an extra life. Points get you nothing. But every single thing you do gets points.
And you know what? You know what's funny about that?
No, it was the one before that. It was
you drove around two little jeeps shooting at things. Yeah, and points did nothing in the game, but you still got combos.
And
you know what's funny about that? It's psychologically, they put that in there because there's like gamers need points.
Yeah,
these points mean nothing, but if we put it in there, they'll love
it. Dan and I were like, I got more points to you in this round. I am a better person than you are.
Yeah. We'd hear this real tongue-in-cheek thing where it would be like a point multiplier in the middle of the floor, and we'd be blowing up things to try and stop the other person from getting there first. And
we actually carried this over into our role-playing game. This is where the point system came from. I wrote down the names of each of the characters and the players who play them, and I said that every time you make me laugh or you do something that I feel is quote unquote point worthy, you will get a point.
Mm-hmm.
And I am keeping track of the points game by game.
And the whole thing was meant to be sort of a facetious object lesson. the stupidity, the futility of the entire thing.
But you know what's hilarious is somebody does something epic. Everyone's like, whoa, and they start laughing. And then I swear to God, that person looks at me is like,
do I get a point
for that? Who's winning on points tonight? Who's got the most points at the end of this game?
We are a competitive race.
Yep.
Good thing, though, if we weren't, we would have never made it to the top. So, all right, let me move into a different topic that's going to start out a little bit unrelated to tabletop RPGs, but we'll also boomerang right back into...
So you hope.
The world of dice.
We're going to talk about animal companions again?
Oh, again, what? Wait, huh?
That's all we're talking about. It's going to be like Groundhog Day.
So groundhogs in days in role-playing games.
All right, so right now, there's a trend in movies and TV in particular. Although I suppose it's not just limited to that, but that seems to be where it's biggest. Of revitalizing or rebooting old intellectual properties. I mean, certainly we've seen that happen with countless superheroes where they've reset the Superman franchise, the Batman franchise, Spider-Man. They're now about to reboot Spider-Man again.
Younger, edgier Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because you really need to tell that origin story over and over and over again.
Hey, man, I'm just holding out for Spider-Baby. Once they get there, I'll start watching.
They did that with Star Trek, with Star Trek 11. It's I suppose unofficially called.
I've given up on Star Trek.
They now are looking into the future. They're, of course, looking at a Thundercats movie for whatever that's
called. A-Team Karate Kid.
A-Team Karate Kid, yeah.
Karate Kid was a good movie that totally stood on its own. It is an awesome movie. I absolutely loved it.
Michael Bay's Transformers.
I've never seen the Transformers movie.
Don't. And G.I. Joe, which is...
I've not seen those movies. I'm not even brave enough to watch. You know what my problem is why I haven't seen these movies? Is because I am not really a nostalgic person.
Well, here's the
thing. I grew up on Transformers and A-Team. No real desire to see a reboot of that.
Here's where I come from on that. I am probably a more nostalgic person than you are, but I would not call myself deeply nostalgic.
Right.
I am not one of those people where because it was older and I grew up with it or whatever, it is therefore automatically, unarguably wonderful. That just makes it, you can't dislike it because it's the A-Team or whatever. No, you absolutely can't. A lot of stuff was crap, quite frankly.
But I can't, you know what I get that a lot on? Scooby-Doo. I do not badmouth Scooby-Doo because before, a few years ago, you could totally badmouth Scooby-Doo. They were awful cartoons. They were poorly animated. They had dumb stories. Every episode was the same. The animation was shit. The whole show was crap. It was Hanna-Barbera cheaped out crap, right? But a few years ago, Scooby-Doo nostalgia hit. You cannot bad talk Scooby-Doo. It is awesome. It's wonderful. It takes me back to my childhood.
There's only one good Scooby thing, and we all four know what that is.
Scooby-Doo is not good unless you add lots of tentacles.
But what I would say about some of these old things is a lot of them had positive qualities.
Except Scooby-Doo.
And or...
Scooby-Doo had Batman.
Crappy Batman.
Hold on. Even with Scooby-Doo, they became popular for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can do is if you look back at these things and understand what made them popular to begin with, what the little gold nuggets were buried in the rough, and you know how to dig those out, refine them, and move them forward, you can indeed create some really good stuff. Well, look at Batman Begins and Dark Knight. I absolutely loved both. I think they did a fantastic job on those, and I'm really looking forward to the third one.
I hope there isn't breakdancing motorcycle in the third one. But other than that, the movie was really
I was not a big fan of the vehicles in either movie. But side tangent, point being, you can then look at other things that were not successful because either they failed to understand what made it great in the first place.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Or, actually, Wing Commander is the one I would go for. I don't know how, Chris Roberts, is that his name? I can't think of the guy who came with Wing Commander. I don't know how that movie got allowed. But you know, either they don't understand what made it great in the first place, or they don't know how to transfer that forward into a revitalized, matured new franchise.
They just
kind of recycle whatever and don't go anywhere with it. All right, so here's the question about this, where I'm going to draw this into role-playing games. Let me just start this off with two simple questions, and then I'm going to dive into the topic here. Just simple yes or no. Has anyone here, and Wayne, I'm going to excuse you from this question because I know the answer is no because you're too relatively new to role-playing. I mean, you're not even 2 years into it yet. But Pat and Chad, have either of you guys ever replayed a character you played before in an unrelated campaign? I'm not talking about part two of the same guy. I'm talking about you played him in this game, game ended, new campaign. You played a guy who was either the same guy or based on
count same guy part two, then no, I haven't. Nor have I ever run a game using recycled material of my own.
Yeah, I really haven't either. I mean, I may come close to when you say sort of basing a character on a previous, but it was never just the same character in a different setting.
I have. And part two of this question, Chad, you already went ahead and answered. I may already know Pat's answer just because you don't GM that much, if ever, really, is have you ever done that with a game plot? Have you ever taken a game plot and run an old game or elements from an old, significant elements from a previous campaign and reuse that into a new campaign?
I have. I've been tempted to a couple of times with you guys, but I haven't. Because to me, a campaign, for me, is so focused on to a micro level onto the characters. Is like I described it. I really don't come up with a campaign until after the party's built, and then I build the campaign based on the party and what the party's given me.
Right.
And maybe I can grab one or two things like rip off, but really I don't even do that. It just doesn't come up.
Don't do that. There are characters that I've recycled, and there are also games where I have run the same campaign. I can't remember having ever done it for the same group of players because that's just kind of weird. I mean, I guess there's maybe situations where that would make sense, but I have before run campaigns for different groups of people where I've taken the campaign and run it for multiple groups. In fact, I actually played under a guy, and this was a fascinating one. He was GMing the same campaign for two groups at the same time and watching the radically different paths that these two groups were taking through the same plot. Easy example of this that I could apply right to the present, con games. At Fear the Cons 1, 2, and 3, all three of them, I ran the same game multiple times for different groups of people.
Yeah, I did that at Fear the Con 3, and it was fascinating to see how they reacted differently to the same story.
So actually, Wayne, I take that back. I guess really you're not excluded from this. You have recycled stuff, maybe in a slightly different way.
I think that's a little bit different, though, because in that case, I'm running it for different people, but it's the same characters.
Yeah, and I suppose that's true. But here's the reason why I think this is a good idea. And there are certainly some pitfalls and problems you have to watch out for. And The differences between your groups is number one on my list, so we are definitely going to hit that. But the positives I start off with is, after a long history of role-playing games, if you've been playing this for a long time, or you're just not a really creative person to begin with, you're eventually going to start burning yourself out. You're going to start running out of ideas. And, you know, even if you're not running out of ideas, I'm a big believer that when you're running a role-playing game, you should draw on any good creative source of inspiration you can find. And that includes yourself. If you're willing to steal ideas from a book or movie, repurpose them and adapt them into your game, why would you not dip back into your own history and do the exact same thing? And just as you can take some intellectual properties and you can dig out the gold nuggets, you can mature them, and you can put them into brand new, possibly, when it starts possibly, better movies or TV shows or novels or whatever, you can absolutely do the same thing with your role-playing games. And there are several characters where I've looked back and like, man, as a teenager, I played this character and it was just monkey ass. I mean, it was just rotten. But you know what? There are some cool concepts in there. There are some really cool items in there that I can use. And so I'll take the character, deconstruct him, and reconstruct him, keeping the good ideas and fixing the bad.
See, you know, even if you don't play that character yourself, that could potentially be an NPC. You've already got a backstory. You've already got the concept there. You know, you need NPCs. Here you go.
And see, I can't do that with an old character, because I look back at my old characters and the ones I think are dumb or the ones I think are cool, I'm done with that concept. I am done with that character. And even if I pull a concept off it, like it's a moody character or if it's a happy character, whatever, it's still got to be a different character for me. I am a person who I have to have constant change in my life. I have to be constantly assaulted with new things.
Well, let me play off the first part of what you said there, which is you said that you're done with it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the characters that I have been wanting to play, and I have tried to play him in several campaigns, and I still someday want to play him, is in my eternal queue for one reason. I never did get to play him well. Mm-hmm. Every campaign I put him into, either the game died pretty quickly, or the GM did not allow me to explore the subject matter I wanted to explore. Mm-hmm. And so I think there can be characters, or from a GM standpoint, plots that may be worth revisiting if for no other reason, even if you thrive on constant change, because they were never allowed to bloom in the first place.
My games are sand paintings. What little notes I have when the campaign is over, I literally take the notes and I throw them in the trash can.
I would say
I don't save anything.
I would say just one word of warning for what you're talking about, Dan, would possibly be talking about a character that, you know, you had great success with in the past and it was just so awesome and whatnot. So you want to do that one again. I think that what happens with this and this whole topic that we're talking about is finding that diamond in the rough is a rarity, I think. And that's why I think that a lot of these repurposed IPs fail miserably. And I'm talking, you know, movies, television shows,
right,
and this, that, or the other. And even when you go back and look at those shows that you thought were so awesome growing up and you rewatch the originals, they're really bad. I think you can possibly fall into the same trap here. That character that you thought was so awesome 10 years ago, you try to replay it again. Maybe it's not so awesome, but maybe that's because you just can't recapture that glory. You did it then, but you know what? It's not recreatable.
You also run the risk of setting yourself up for unreasonable expectations.
Yeah, that's true. You think, oh my God, this guy was so awesome back then, so he's got to be awesome now. And then if he's not, then it's just, you know, it sort of fails. So I don't know. I'm more along the lines of Chad, I think, in this, and the fact that I like, you know, try something different.
Mm-hmm.
Do something more original. My personal take on all this repurposed stuff is, because my wife and I talk about all the time, is that how can it be that there are no original ideas anymore? Mm-hmm. And the fact that they can't come up with an original idea for a movie or a television show. They have to remake one from 20 years ago.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a minute. And I totally see where you're coming from. But let me play devil's advocate. If we go from the movie and television and novel standpoint, there is a take on things that I think is both cynical and accurate at the same time. I resent the idea, but the more I understand it, the less I can disagree with it as much as I want to, which is that there are only so many formulas for things to begin with. There's a finite number of possible human archetypes. There's a finite number of plot archetypes. On the one hand, I get what you're saying, but I think certainly within the realm of the plots you write as a GM or the characters you create as a player, certainly over the long haul of an RP career, trends and ruts are going to start to emerge anyway. And there comes a point where if you really tell yourself everything I'm doing is brand new, after a certain amount of time, you're just kidding yourself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, there are two big pitfalls, and you guys have actually already brought up both, that I think bear a lot of care that you could easily fall into doing this. Problem number one is these things themselves can very easily turn into easy ruts, a quick way around any attempt at creativity. You're just playing the same damn thing, the same damn guy, the same damn plot over and over. You are not even attempting to put the veneer of creativity into this anymore. You're just recycling the same boring crap. And Chad, I think this is where we would quickly head into your, you thrive on exploring new things.
Right.
And this, if you're not doing this right, you would very quickly be cut off from doing that.
And if you forget that one person in the game actually was there for the original game, you can find yourself overly predictable.
Well, and that is problem number two.
Or if you tell a lot of gaming stories, and you're telling about past glories and you think it's like, man, I've got this killer plot twist that they'll never see coming, but you've told them all 100 times. Yeah. And you've forgotten.
Like, if I ever get a bird, I'm not flying it over Orcs. I know what's going to happen.
Oh,
I've heard it three or four times.
I'm never getting an animal familiar, ever. It's going to poop all over my spell book every time.
You know, I think that's part of the reason we have to avoid gaming stories on Fear the Food. It's not just for the storytelling quality, it's because every gaming story we tell, we have possibly hamstrung an option for some future campaign. But the other thing is, you have to accept that every group, game, and situation is different. And when you are resurrecting something, whether it's a plot or a character idea, you have got to accept two things. One, you have to customize this to the people.
Totally.
An example in a plot is there's a Forgotten Realms campaign that I have run for 2 or 3 different groups before and hope to run for our current gaming group at some point in the future down the road. But I have built the campaign in a somewhat plug-and-play fashion to where I can set things up based on the characters these guys create. I know I cannot run the exact same campaign down to the tiniest plot point every time because these are different people. They're going to approach the plot in different ways. They're going to view different guys in the plot, some of which are very morally gray, as allies or adversaries. You know, there may be a radical divergence from what the previous group did.
They might have different resources.
They will have different characters. Mm-hmm. And so you can...
Or the big, huge, important, crazy, cool thing that really impressed the past 4 groups, this group,
we got 3.
Doesn't care. We got 3. Whatever.
And you know what, Dan? When you're talking about this, I actually totally agree with. When you're talking about you've got a story that you've written before that worked really well, it's a really good story, and you're repurposing it, you know, reusing it for a group of players again, I am totally on board with that. And now that might sound contradictory to what I said before, but the difference is that what you're doing is, as long as your players that are going through it this time, it's their first time through it, it's new to them.
Yeah.
So as long as I've not played through it before and it's a really good story, I want to experience that good story. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's sort of likened unto if you're using modules or something like that, that it's written out. And if it's a good story and it stands up, it's kind of like the classics, you know, they're good stories. That's why they're still, you know, they're around, you read them, they're good. So in that case, I think it's good. Now, again, I wouldn't want to play through it one time and then say 5 years from now, roll up totally new characters and play through it again because I've done it before.
Yeah. I would want it pretty heavily modified too, because one of the interesting things about campaigns is that, you know, you've created your characters from the beginning, you've given your backstory, and that's interwoven into what's happened. I do like the idea of each campaign being unique to those characters. You know, I think that you can easily go back and tell the same story again, but it's going to need a lot of tweaks to make it relevant to these characters.
Well, and I think, yeah, you have to know how to mine parts of it without mining all of it. If, for example, when we were talking about GM note-taking several episodes back.
The hell is that?
Yeah, I know. I mentioned that one
Hey, you are taking notes in this campaign. I've seen the notebook and I've seen the
You've
pencil.
You've seen the scorecard and the name
That's
list.
That's true.
That's right. I have all my notes for this campaign right in my pocket. I'm right here. I can produce them right now. Look at that. These are all of the GM notes.
I'm just this impressed you actually have them with you right now.
I carry them with me every single place I go in case get an idea.
You know what I'm also really surprised about?
What's that?
That they're not on your iPhone. That they're actually on paper.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to put them on my iPhone, but there's a 1,000-character limit on the iPhone app I use.
One of the things that I mentioned that episode is that I have this document that I call the What's Really Going On document, where I lay out, okay, prior to their arrival on the scene, the various factions that are at war here are doing this and manipulating that, moving this way or whatever. And these are ideas that will probably be usable regardless of what the party is. Now, certainly, I cannot have the exact plot setup, the exact hooks, whatever, be the same, because they're going to be different people. The first time through, they were Space Marines. The second time through, they were a salvage crew.
Crazy Uncle Jim said, go here. But I don't have a crazy Uncle Jim.
Exactly. But you know what? In either case,
yeah, do now.
The evil overlord can still be trying to do whatever. And so there are concepts that I can take and I can reapply, accepting that, yes, they have to be modified, they have to be customized back to this group, but there are still some things that can come back around. And along those lines, another concern that I would tie into customizing this is accept that you can't go back. You may be repurposing something you've used before, but if what you are trying to do is recreate the exact experience you had before, it might work out. Chances are you are going to be horribly disappointed, because this group of people is not going to go down the same way. They may not care. It's going to be a little different. It's the same thing. You know what? If you come home from college, guess what? There's just no going back. You can't have those old days all over again. And it's the same sort of thing. No going into this, that what you're trying to do is recycle an idea because it was good, not recreate an exact experience, because that is destined to failure.
You know, that's the important thing, I guess, is when you're looking back, what is the idea versus the experience? What was good about it? Was it the story that was being told, or was it the interactions that people had? Because if you're mistaken and it's the interactions, that whole thing could backfire on you. So, Chad, you mentioned earlier you actually destroy your GM notes.
Yes.
Why do you do that?
Because I don't want them. It's this concept that I have with a lot of things in life where I am done. I am finished with this campaign. I am done with it, and I don't want it to be in my life anymore.
You know, there's something
a sense of doneness
fascinating about that, which is you, however, are someone who admits you are a shameless whore in terms of stealing ideas.
Oh, totally.
I mean, we've played cyberpunk games that were based on the plot of Neuromancer.
Yeah, and it's great because most of the people haven't read Neuromancer.
Well, but my question is, internally, what's the difference? Because, I mean, you read Neuromancer, you've experienced the story.
You don't burn the book after you read the book.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't go back and reread the book. I don't reread any books.
Well, that's not my point, though. I wasn't going that direction. My point was more, though, that you finish the book, you've experienced the plot, now you carry it into a role-playing game and repurpose it, really, in a way that's no different than what would be repurposing an old RPG campaign. And I'm curious, internally to you, what's the difference?
Because I'm stealing an idea or two.
Okay.
And then I'm taking that idea and I'm expanding on them. Take Seeds of Inspiration. I mean, to say that I read a book like Neuromancer, which I absolutely love that book, and that it doesn't affect me in some way would be really disingenuous. You know, it touches me, it changes me, even just a little bit as a person. It leaves something behind, and I'm done with the book. I have this concept. I'm sure that other languages have a better word for this, but this concept of doneness, to where it's probably my second or third favorite book ever, and I've only read it once, and I will never read it again in my whole life. And to some readers, that's abhorrent. There are people out there who read their favorite book once a year. Every year on the same day, they read their favorite book. And I cannot do that. I just don't want to do that. And I have this doneness with the book. But it does leave footprints behind. It does leave seeds behind. And I take those little seeds and I scatter them throughout the rest of my life.
See, I'm the kind of person, I still have my notes from our original Skies of Glass game. So the whole concept of basically burning your bridge behind you,
but I
just don't get it.
But it's what, like the game that I'm running with you now, if it comes to a completion, the notes to me are meaningless. It's the footprints that have been left behind on me, even though I have the sense of doneness with it, which I'm not there yet, thank God. The notes are meaningless. It's what has changed me as a person. It's what I've gotten out of the game. It's the seeds that game has planted that maybe I'll take into other parts of my life, that I cherish, that I remember, that I'm fond of. Those two pieces of paper that are in my pocket that I have all these notes scribbled on that I keep just in case I'm in the middle of somewhere and I'm scrabbling for a pen so I can write down a quick jot of an idea, that's nothing to me. It is absolutely nothing to me when I am done with this thing.
I fall somewhere between the two in that I...
You save everything.
Well, I do, but the reason I say I fall between the two is not that I don't save everything, because in that regard, yes, I do. I do not always refer back to it. Now, the really far opposite extreme that I think would go beyond probably what even Wayne does is when we were gaming with Mike, he had a filing cabinet that he kept fairly well organized. Any character he played in any game, any background write-up he did, any plot that he had run went into this filing cabinet. He did not often refer back to it. I mean, he was not constantly digging through it. But here was a man who had gamed for a long time. In fact, I believe, Chad, he started gaming at a younger age than you and I did.
Sure.
Despite being about, I think, like a year younger than us in calendar age. But he'd started gaming before we did. Has gamed in a ton of different groups. Ended up having like 45 kids and had to stop doing pretty much everything in life. Yeah. But prior to that...
Oh, think of his gaming group in 15 years, though.
Yeah, this was a man, though, that had a lot of games under his belt. And he and I had numerous discussions where he was expressing frustration that some of our games were turning over kind of quickly. And what he started doing was he could go back into that filing cabinet. He could dig out characters he had played 10, 15 years ago, dust them off, and once again, at least get some nugget out of that, some seed out of that, some hook out of that, that still interested him, that he still felt was worth exploring and was able to repurpose into a new game. As for me, I do keep a lot of the old resources, but that's just because I'm a pack rat.
You keep all the old resources.
I don't actually ever really refer back to them.
Yeah. I've got the same problem. I don't look back at anything, but I keep it all.
Well, you know what I do go back to them for, though? Is rules concepts. Like, for example, the consoles that I use for Star Trek for the ship combat. That was something I developed years ago and redusted off for fear of the count. I'll probably be redusting off again once our group comes around, finishes your campaign, and comes around to playing a Star Trek game. When we played Battletech, one of the things that I would do is I would give the mechs themselves perks and problems that I would typically draw from the stuff that's say in technical readouts. Like I'd mention, oh, this mech has an unusually accurate laser but tends to stumble when jumping. So I'd write in, it has a plus one to hit with this laser, but there's a minus one to the piloting skill roll when you do a jump or something like that.
Yeah.
And this is stuff that I have piled up, and I go back and reference that. And so there were game concepts that really were not directly soft ideas like plot or character, but more hard ideas like rules and numbers that I can go back and pull from these old campaigns and repurpose into new uses.
Dan has some of my old character sheets.
I used to, and I recently threw them out.
What?
I had. No. I had our characters, our very first characters from Star Trek going back to 1988. And I only recently finally threw them out because the Star Trek box, which is exploding at the seams, is literally has broken apart at the seams, was 3 inches taller than the box originally should have been.
That's because it's like, sitting in a corner unused.
Dan, do you still have the hand-drawn full-color maps you used to use?
I do not. Those got thrown out when I did the same purge. Well, someday, though, digging through something, I may uncover or recover some of those. And I do still have a lot of notes from old games and old game systems, old homebrews. I still have the original Skies of Glass rules. I'm the ones that were radically different than anything we've released in recent times that had the rather extremely graphic two-hit chart.
Yeah.
Where that included things like you shattered a guy's hip with a bow and arrow.
It was awesome.
So
I had to do a mercy kill on that one.
All right, so here's my challenge.
Asked me to mercy kill him. Don't give me that look.
He actually did.
I smiled. He actually did. He didn't ask Chad to shoot him in the first place, but once he was...
It was a really cool scene because I was hunting. I had my bow and arrow out. I was playing this old guy. And a dog came out, and I thwanked the dog. And then I pulled another arrow out, and then this guy came out of the bush. What'd you do to my dog? Thunk. And I just let one fly. Because, you know... That conversation wasn't going to end well, so I was just speeding things along. Nailed him in the hip. I mean, just a horrible, terrible, bleeding to death wound, mortal wound.
You shattered his hip bone.
I ran over. I'm playing a really good guy, and I'm, well, good-ish.
Yeah, exactly.
A really good guy that just shot the dog. Good-ish. He was trying. I was hungry.
Hey.
You were chaotic.
Got heat.
I set him up. I will totally say as the game master, I completely set him up. He said he was going hunting. I said, you see a dog. I never mentioned an old man. And I will admit, as a GM, I totally
it was a great setup, too. And so I come up to him, and I'm like, I have a first aid kit. I can help you. He's like, no, man, I'm a goner. I'm like, no, I can help you. And he's like, no, man, just do me a favor. Just finish me off. You killed my dog. You killed me. Now finish me off. And I pulled out my gun and I had like this 357 Magnum and it only had six shots because I could afford the gun and just the bullets that go in it, but I couldn't afford anything else. And so I put it to his head and I'm just like, he's like, finish. I'm like, I'm not going to kill you. He's like, finish me. I'm not going to kill you. Finish me. And I pull the trigger. Blam! And this loud bang rings out across this eerily silent forest. And then I hear his buddies drawn by the report of the gun. And I'm like, oh,
but you, Arnold, good old run like hell. And yeah, you got out of there.
Yeah.
And the dog was good eating.
Yeah, it was.
All right. But here's my challenge to anyone that's listening to this episode. If you are at a point in your role playing history where either one, you're burnt out, you're struggling to come up with ideas, or you know what, looking back, you fondly remember a particular plot or a particular character you had a lot of fun with in the past. I'm not saying you should run out and redo them, but what I am saying is don't take the option off the table. To use nice pop psych wording, give yourself permission to take out these old characters and at least consider recycling them or repurposing them to newer and more mature games.
I would play history again. If you ran a certain kind of Skies of Glass game, I would play
and
my old
I'm
character.
There's a D&D character who would not at all work in our current campaign, but I have wanted to play him for years, and I have been screwed out of him in every game I've played. Not by you, it's by another GM. It screwed me out of this character every time I tried to play him. So someday, I will play this character.
You know, that's a good topic we should do next time. GMs who screw players out of concepts. Because, you know, you go in with a certain concept, you have an arrangement with a GM, and the GM nullifies it
they're
somehow.
They're dicks. I'm not sure what the discussion
is. Well, they're dicks, but
yeah.
As a player, what can you do?
Violence.
As a GM. Look at it from the GM perspective. Is there a reasonable reason, I guess, for the GM to do such a thing? And
no, there's not.
My
wife could talk to the subject.
So, well, maybe we'll at least make that a banter topic or something. We'll see where we can go with it. But
at least we could vent our spleens at it.
Yeah. In the meantime, you guys have great games, and we will catch you next time.
Blam! That dog's good eats.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.